Who likes the movies?
Welcome to episode 2 of Sean at the Movies. I'm Sean Kernan. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means a lot to me. Movies are my passion. I'm a member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association, who also vote on the Critics' Choice Awards, the Critics' Choice Superhero Awards, as well as the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards, which means I just watch a lot of movies, basically. But it is my passion and my love, and I thank you so much for indulging that with me as I talk about some things that are coming out and some things that have already been out for a while, and just basically talk with filmmakers about making movies. And today's episode, I've got a pair of interviews for you. Two interviews I conducted with both the subject of a documentary and the documentarian. I was lucky enough to get a chance to talk with legendary writer, best-selling author, Tim O'Brien, who's one of the most famous voices when it comes to having been to Vietnam, but also speaking out against the war in Vietnam. And he's, of course, he's written books that are just really stunning works that really caught a lot of people. Really spoke to a lot of people, such as 1973's If I Die in a Combat Zone, Box Me Up and Send Me Home. Where Have You Gone, Charming Billy? The Things They Carried in 1990 was maybe one of his biggest hits. He won the National Book Award for that. In the Lake in the Woods, Tomcat in Love. His most recent book is the subject of the documentary Tim O'Brien, The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien, by director Aaron Matthews. And Aaron Matthews has done an amazing job bringing the life, the modern life of Tim O'Brien into focus and taking us inside a writer's life in a way that I don't think any documentary ever has before. And if you're a writer, you watch this documentary, you're going to see things in this documentary that they're going to feel them deep. The ways in which a writer can get into that zone of just wanting to write and not stop and get tunnel vision right into it's between you and your keyboard. And it's just this perfect unison, this almost musical-like thing where it's a fugue state almost. And then there are other times when you're struggling and you can't quite come up with the words. And Tim's way of doing that is he gets lost in his kitchen and cleaning and, trying to think of ideas, but mostly he just focused. He's got to focus on something. He can't focus on writing in that moment, so he's cleaning his kitchen. Like, it just something little like that, but it so brilliantly captures the mind of a writer. That's what I love about The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. It's an absolutely wonderful documentary that'll be available on streaming rental services as of March 3rd, so less than a week from today. Do check it out on March 3rd when it is available on your favorite streaming rental services. Again, it's called The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien, and I caught up with the director, Aaron Matthews, as well as the subject of that interview, the subject of the documentary, Tim O'Brien, for today's Sean at the Movies. Indeed. Now, let's just jump right into it. So we're talking with Aaron Matthews, the director of The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. And first of all, when you stepped into this to make a movie about Tim O'Brien, what was your thought process?
Well, I had met Tim working on another documentary that I was directing for PBS called The Draft. And that film looked at the history of the military draft in America. And I just got really interested in how Americans are so disconnected from the wars we wage and how so few people bear the burden of killing and dying in this country. And I interviewed Tim as part of that documentary, and his interview just kind of blew me away. He was a smart, funny wordsmith, which you might expect from a legendary author, but he was also emotionally raw and spoke in this, from the heart kind of candid way that was just really electrifying to me, And he presented as this regular guy in the interview, with his trademark jeans and baseball cap, but he definitely wasn't a regular guy, He was clearly operating on a higher level, able to express like big ideas about the meaning and impact of war in a very powerful, relatable way. And basically at the end of that interview that I did for The Draft, I just thought I really wanted to do a film about this guy.
Was it always going to be, was it going to be something about the war initially, or did you always think that going inside his life and finding out what was going on was going to be your subject?
I wanted to, you know, with a documentary, it's the themes and what you want to cover are kind of evolving all the time, but I really did, and I was drawn to this idea of looking at the broad scope of war and also looking at the, you know, war in different facets of our lives. So looking at the wars we fight with family, the wars we fight with the jobs we do, the wars we fight with ourselves, you know. And Tim kind of encapsulated all that. And once I found out that he was writing this book, you know, he, after not having written for a long time, he had sworn off sentences for, you know, 15 years, and he would be writing a book while juggling, you know, being a new father. I just thought there might be a movie here that followed, you know, our poet laureate of war, engaging with not only the wars our nation wages, but the wars, you know, we all fight.
And absolutely. And the organic way that you appear to capture that that almost decision that he makes to start writing another book, and the conversation that he wants to have with his two sons, that is really, it really feels very organic.
Thank you for saying that. The organic part does take a lot of time and effort, and so much of that is attributable to Tim and his family, who were incredibly generous and open in letting me into their lives. And I spent a lot of time just following Tim around with the camera. And that's that. The goal was to kind of capture a lot of the decisions on the fly and tell a story over time and watch Tim's thinking change over time, because those are the stories that are most compelling in the end, where we watch people who are really great talkers and have a lot to say change over time, and then you know, come at us with a new interesting idea about the world that we live in, and Tim certainly does that in the film.
Something interesting.
Plus, as you
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say that in talking with Tim O'Brien, he was telling me about, and this kind of strikes me about you as a filmmaker, not being overly precious about what you do, is that one of the big scenes in this movie, one that really resonated deeply with me, was one that his wife actually captured, and then you took and put into the movie.
That, yeah, we were really lucky to have, first of all, Meredith, Tim's wife, who appears in the film. She's incredibly you know, funny and bright and articulate, and she's just a great counterbalance to Tim in the film. And we were really fortunate to have Meredith's home video footage, which I asked her to capture in part along the way, because I don't live in Austin. I live in Brooklyn, so I knew that I wasn't going to be there for the many years that I'd be making this film. So she captured some stuff on our iPad, but she also is the family videographer, so she captures stuff in general. And yeah, like you said, a lot of that really raw personal stuff makes its way into the film, and I think complements a lot of the footage and a lot of the ways into Tim O'Brien's life and the artistic process that you get in the film.
Absolutely. And one of the really key things that I really love about this is the way that so many people can just kind of write off nonfiction writing as something of a journalistic exercise. But what you capture is the art form of Tim O'Brien.
Yeah, and he really is a true artist. And the film, we were so lucky also just to have the book that he was writing, because his words are so wonderful and insightful and poetic that to be able to have not just real life footage of Tim struggling to write this one last book, but to have the finely crafted verbiage of Tim O'Brien to kind of play over home video footage, it was really like a documentarian's gift to be able to have all these elements to play with in the final edit, you know, and make a film that I think people find is not just like a portrait of an artist, but like a revealing look at One American Family.
No doubt about it. And he's writing this very confessional, unique sort of book that he ends up calling Dad's Maybe Book, because he might not publish it at all. And that gives you this, again, this organic sort of drama that's taking place. If you don't know that Tim O'Brien wrote that book, you're kind of wondering, is he ever going to finish it?
It was one of the perpetual jokes of the filmmaking process with Tim, because he has a very dark sense of humor, and that is one of the things that we share. He has this gallows humor. And every time I showed up, at least for the first three quarters of filming, he'd kind of scold me and say, you know, you don't have a film unless I die. I'm going to have to die for this film to have enough plot points and enough stakes for people to want to watch it. And fortunately, that didn't happen. But we managed to get a lot of exciting, dramatic material anyway. And, it didn't stop him from chain smoking throughout the entire film, which actually was one of the initial draws of doing the film, because the frame was filled with like cinematic swirls all the time, and that appealed to me. There are all these other weird, details about Tim that I wanted the rest of the world to get to know and see. In addition, people know him through his great books, but they don't know that he's, a pretty skilled magician, and the house is filled with these giant contraptions and paraphernalia, cages and guillotines and flashing lights. And he's a really, Las Vegas game. He goes to Las Vegas and gambles. He's like a pretty skilled blackjack player, there were interesting aspects of his personality that come out in the film. He's very funny also.
Yeah.
So there's a lot in here that I hope people appreciate. They'll definitely see, even if you know Tim O'Brien and his work, they'll see a side to him that they haven't seen before.
Well, Aaron, when can we see The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien?
Well, it's actually available today on Apple iTunes for pre-order, and everywhere we buy or stream movies on March 2nd. So Apple, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, etc. All those channels.
Terrific. Well, Aaron Matthews, I'm out of time, but thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks so much for talking.
There's a documentary coming out early next month. It's called The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. And of course, that name is familiar to you as a National Book Award winner, best-selling author. Tim O'Brien joins us now. Tim, thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I've seen the documentary, and this is a behind-the-scenes look at you writing what you feel might have been your last book, but maybe not.
Yeah, you never know. I'm 74 years old, so the odds are pretty slim that I'll have the energy to spend 5 years on another book. But I'm glad I wrote the last one.
Yes, this is Dad's Maybe Book, and it's a great title, and it really encompasses what you were thinking about at that time, that maybe you'll finish this, maybe you won't, and it's a conversation between you and your two young sons.
That's right. My older boy now is 17. It's hard to believe he was, 13 when I started it. And the younger boy is 15. But you're right, it's a conversation with my kids about our lives, about who I am, my history as a soldier in Vietnam, my own childhood, and my work as a writer. And I listen to them talk about the things that interest them, like video games, for example. One big problem in our house.
Interesting thing about you, of course, you've written about Vietnam and talked about your experience there and the experience of that hellish war. It's interesting to note that over the generations, and especially when we're talking about kids that are the age of your kids, that over time it seems almost subconsciously we've been told not to ask about Vietnam, especially younger people. Do you have a similar sense of that?
I do. I think part of it comes out of simple human politeness that you don't want to disturb somebody who, by asking what was the war like or did you ever kill anyone. And so out of politeness, a lot of people just don't ask questions. And it's the same with veterans themselves, whether it's a veteran of my era, Vietnam, or today, where a soldier is reluctant to bring it up with civilians, people who haven't been in a war. You don't go to a party and say, hey, do you want to talk about Vietnam or do you want to talk about Afghanistan? So it's politeness on both sides, in part. In my own case, I had the good fortune to be a writer, and that helped a lot. I was able to, in my solitary time here in front of my computer, I was able to revisit the war, not by talking about it, but by writing about it in the stories I've written. And so I've been really fortunate to have that outlet.
The interesting thing here, again, when talking about the documentary as well as the most recent book, is that you were kind of wondering, because your kids weren't asking you about Vietnam, if they had any real good questions about it or if they wanted to talk about it at all.
Well, my own children are pretty silent. They know I was once a soldier. They knew I was in combat as an infantryman. But I think they don't want to. I think they don't want to disturb me by asking questions about it. Now and then, one of the boys will, ask a particular question, especially if in school they're studying the Vietnam War. They'll ask a few questions then. But mainly, they're very careful around me, kind of walking on tiptoes around the whole subject. Again, I think afraid of disturbing me.
How does that make you feel do you want people to ask you about Vietnam, or is this a subject that you wrote about it and you want to kind of be done with it?
It's a mixture for me. In a way, the latter. I kind of want to be done with it. The problem is the war won't be done with me. Hmm. That I'll sometimes glaze out at the dinner table just for 10 seconds. Something will remind me of what happened 50 years ago, and I'll be back when I was 22 years old, walking in the rice paddies of Vietnam, or tending to somebody who had a leg blown off.
Yeah.
And I'll be there for a few moments, and then I'll come back out of it. So I kind of want to be done with that, but it just will not let me go. I think it's a lot like people who might have a divorce and it stays with them, or had breast cancer. You do recover, or you can, but it's never going to go completely away. It's there in your memory in those late hours of the night, you're trying to fall asleep, and it comes back, as happens to all of us in different kinds of ways.
And then it's interesting, as a writer, you have all these very interesting experiences. You go through Vietnam, you go through becoming a best-selling author, and you reach a point in your life where you're pretty set in your ways, where you think you know what you're going to do next. You're thinking about the next book, and then you realize there's this other life that's waiting for you that involves children and being essentially an old dad.
Right, I came to it really old. I'm, as I said, 74, and I've got two teenage kids. And luckily, I'm still able to do things with them. I can, throw a football and play basketball and that sort of thing. Not with the speed I used to do it, but I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to keep up with them, sort of. But there is always this ticking of the clock when you get to be my age. Maybe there'll be a tomorrow. Maybe there won't be. And that's with you a lot when you have children, that you worry about them without a father, and you worry about them being crying and being sad and wishing I were around. It's inevitable. So in the book, and I hope in the documentary as well, that'll be out in a couple of weeks, that they'll have that for when they're 30 years old or 40 years old. They won't have my body there with them, but they'll be able to see on the screen as they're watching the documentary or in the pages of the book, they'll be able to feel the love I have for them and how I adored them. And devoted a lot of my life to them. I quit writing for them for 15 years just so I could be a good father. And I think they'll appreciate that.
And it's so interesting, too, because as that's a lovely sentiment. At the same time, you're confronting a lot of people who are going to tell you that this is a rather morbid notion, even though it's just really for you, it's the truth.
Yeah, it's not morbid to me. It's just the truth that's in front of me. You can't deny biology. We try to. We go to cocktail parties, and we watch movies, and we chat with neighbors. We go play games of bridge and Scrabble. We do anything we can to avoid the obvious, but it's in front of all of us. I don't consider it morbid. What I consider it was an opportunity to transmit to my children my love. So I took it as an opportunity, not morbid at all.
Mm-hmm. It's also, it's complex as well, because here you are in the midst of being a father, and you know what your writing process is like. You can become almost a cave dweller when it comes to this. You're just such tunnel vision. And you bring that so perfectly to life in this movie.
Good. It's one of the things Aaron Matthews was able to do in the documentary. It's, you know, maybe an eighth of the movie has to do with war, but the rest of it has to do with being a writer and making my way not only through a new book, which he documented, but life with the children and with my wife. And how a writer, I think many people think a writer's life is going to cocktail parties in New York or LA, and it's just not that way. A writer's life is sitting alone in a room in your underwear 8 hours a day. That's the writer's life, staring at a screen, trying to write a book. Right. And I think it's good for people who appreciate books to know of the struggle that goes into making them.
Yeah.
And I hope that comes through in the movie.
And in your process, in your case, when you're not writing, it's thinking about writing while you're cleaning.
Yeah, there's a scene with me on my hands and knees, you know, cleaning the kitchen floor at 3 a.m. My wife actually filmed that portion of it. She came down with her iPad and, "What are you doing?" And it was getting ready to work that day, where washing dishes and cleaning the kitchen up. It's kind of my way of letting the day begin, knowing that an hour or so I'll be at the computer working. And little bumblebees of memory go through your head, or ideas, little scraps of language. Just a sentence might come through my head, and I'll get up and scribble it down, and then go back to doing the dishes or polishing the kitchen counters. It's how I get into the day.
Yeah. Oh, as a writer myself, that was the moment that really clicked with me in this movie, is that I knew exactly what you were thinking in that moment.
Yeah, people think when you stop writing, but you don't.
No.
After you leave the paper or the computer, you walk away, it's still buzzing in your head. Hmm. Sometimes it's frustration that's buzzing in your head, how little you got done that day, a sentence or a paragraph, and that was it. And other times there's kind of an elation, thinking, boy, today went really well. I can't wait for tomorrow. And then you come up against tomorrow, and it's just as hard as it was a week ago. So it's a mixture for me, and maybe for you, of real elation and happiness and satisfaction, mixed with incredible frustration about how hard it is on certain days.
You and Aaron have captured that in this new documentary, The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. And Tim, thank you so much for all of your work. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Have a good day.
Thank you again to Tim O'Brien and to Aaron Matthews for being our guest today on Shaun at the Movies. Coming up next week, director Will Wernick is going to be our guest. He was the director of the terrific 2019 horror movie Escape Room, and now he's back with a brand new quarantine thriller called Safer at Home.
We thought was the end of COVID.
The new strain is 3 times more contagious and has twice the mortality rate.
Increasing penalties have been set for those breaking the strict nationwide curfews.
It's gotten terrible out here. Happy birthday, Evan!
Obviously, Vegas can happen. So, we're taking the Vegas party that you all thought was dead, and we're bringing it right here, right now.
What is this, like Molly or something?
Tonight is about forgetting about all this stuff that's out of our control, just for one night with no consequences.
We're in. Should we?
Dance battle?
Woo! These drugs are strong.
Sucks doing this quarantine alone.
At least you're not trapped with the same face over and over and over.
People, right here, we can see you.
I've seen people on Molly. This doesn't seem like that.
I don't know what this is.
What did you just say to me?
I think that's the drugs.
Not the drugs, Evan, because I didn't tell
you.
I was so excited to tell you. I was
what? Tell me what?
Oh my God.
What happened?
I didn't see it.
Jen!
We have to call an ambulance.
No ambulance is going to come. Everything that's going on.
What's happening?
She's not breathing.
Tell me what to do. What do I do?
Something happened, and now she's dead.
What was that?
The police.
Get out of there, Evan.
I have to go over there.
I'm on my way.
What am I going to do? Okay, we were on video doing drugs. Jen is dead, and we watched Evan kill her.
We're on a private video.
Private? Are you kidding me?
This is way too big for us now.
I didn't do anything.
Nobody's gonna breathe.
I can barely breathe. No.
Hands where I can see it.
I'm sick. Get away.
Safer at Home is our subject next week, directed by Will Wernick, and Will will be our guest next week on Shaun at the Movies here on WKEI and, of course, our WKEI podcast network. I'm Sean Kernan. Thank you for tuning into this edition of Shaun at the Movies, and more to come next week.